You got some awesome stuff in here, bro.
Yeah, I got the feeling the ocean floor is a little more interesting.
And it'll stay that way now, thanks to you.
Well, I did have some help.
We could make a pretty good team, huh? Maybe we should start up a junior lifeguard association or something.
I'm not sure I'm ready for the JLA just yet, unless you promise to stop blowing things up.
As long as Luther sticks to dry land, I'll keep the C4 to myself. But if anyone messes with my home...
Look, I don't think Leviathan's going to be a threat again, but Lex might. He's seen your abilities. He'll turn the world upside down looking for you.
The world's 3/4 water. Good luck finding me.
What about school in Miami?
Guess the swim team will have to find another handsome stud.
Just stay out of trouble, all right, AC?
You try to get in some, Clark. Stay super, bro. Somebody save me indeed. Hello and welcome to Farm to Fable, a Smallville Rewatch fancast. I am your forever host, Michael, and I'm also the host of the RPG Academy podcast, where I talk mostly about role-playing games, but all tabletop gaming in general. I also organize a 3-day gaming convention held in Dayton, Ohio each November. Before we get started, please be advised that Farm to Fable may include adult language and reference adult behavior. Please consider us PG-13 in regards to content acceptability for your young ones. Also, this is your spoiler warning. While we will focus on each episode week to week, our discussions may and likely will reference the entire series run and the wider Superman mythos. You can email our show at smallvillefancast@gmail.com with any comments, concerns, or questions. Please follow us on Twitter at Farm2Fable. And join our Facebook group page at Smallville Farm to Fable. With all of that out of the way, let's meet today's co-host.
My name is David. This is the first podcast I've ever done. I am major superhero, big Smallville fan. As of the last 2 years, big Smallville fan, but major Superman and superhero dork in general.
Well, welcome to the show. Welcome to our little corner of Smallville. You're one of the new co-hosts that are joining us just for season 5 or starting with season 5. Again, it's like you found the show, emailed in, and now you're here. So we always like to start with our new co-host. What's your Smallville origin story? You kind of mentioned in your intro that for like the last couple of years. So are you pretty new to Smallville?
Yeah, relatively. So my uncle is, so I'm only in my 20s. So my uncle's a bit older than me, and and he's kind of who got me into the superhero game. But I saw my whole life, I saw his big old 10 season collection of Smallville in his basement. And I always wondered what it was, but I never really paid that much attention to it as much as I was into superheroes. And I watched all the other CW shows and stuff. But eventually one day I was like, I got to know what's up with it. I always see the shirt ripping open at the end of the series, and I gotta know what's up with it. So I watched it, and a couple episodes in, I was like, I don't know. But once I really started rolling, because I didn't have internet at the time, I had no choice other than watch Smallville. But I fell in love with it, and I've had a hard time shaking it since. And that's been about 2 years now.
Well, I'm happy to hear Uncle there is doing the good work and, you know, bringing more and more people into the fold. So good on them. And again, absolutely welcome to have you here in the show. I'm looking forward to get into this show and talking about it. So let's get into the show proper, as we always do with our pass the torch question. So last week, Bobby had asked, what is your favorite actual song? So we're talking needle drops here, not score, used in any episode across the entire series, and why?
So I had to look and find which song. I didn't even remember this song being used. It was used in season 2, episode 19. So that's the one where Lana gets her ass in the bar and Clark throws those guys onto the cop car and stuff like that. Not important. Anyways, the song is Don't Forget Me by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Great song. Love them. I'm wearing one of their shirts right now. I love those guys. That was probably my favorite one in the show.
All right. There are so many. I mean, obviously, it's something that we call out every episode when there are some significant needle drops. And I just touched on a couple weeks ago with our sort of wrap up Smallville superlatives thing. But I really like that Avril Lavigne song, Can't Speak. So Much for My Happy Ending. And that's a lyric. Oh, that's the name of the song.
I almost said that one. It is used in the episode.
It is one. It's just a good song. You know, I enjoy that song as it is. And then I really think it hits because Chloe truly, truly believed that Lana was kind of out of the picture and that she had a chance with Clark. And right as that's happening, clearly there's a connection between Lois and Clark there. And even though it takes a very, very long time to develop, I just think the song, the lyrics, just everything hits so hard there. Mm-hmm. That one, at least that's the one that came to me top of mind, though Johnny Cash's Hurt, which was also one of the ones that was in our top for the superlatives, is also very good, used when Lex is in the asylum. So that might have been my second choice there.
Yeah, strong choices all around.
So with that out of the way, we're going to grab a copy of this week's Daily Planet, check the bylines to see who brought us this episode.
I mean, that's a story that could land you a byline on the front page of the Daily Planet.
So we're here today to discuss Season 5, Episode 4, Aqua. The date of original airing was October 20th, 2005. The character Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, and Smallville was created by Alfred Goff and Miles Miller. The writers for today, Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer.
Bradford May is the director for the episode. It is his one and only episode that he directed.
So let's now open our Smallville yearbook and see who our notable guest stars are.
Get me a yearbook.
James Marsters as Milton Fine.
We also have Alan Richson as Arthur A.C. Curry. I will note that Alan also plays Hank Hall on the Titans show, which is on HBO Max, and he's Jack Reacher in the new Reacher show on Amazon Prime.
Yep, that is the main reason I reached out for this episode specifically. I love him in both of those shows. He's on his way up. He is a cool guy. He's just a cool guy.
He's very different here because I've seen him in Titans recently. I really do like that Jack Reacher show. I watched that when it came. I think I've actually watched the series twice. And I think I knew intellectually that was him, but then rewatching this episode, I was like, oh, that's him.
He also put on maybe like 50 pounds of muscle since then.
I mean, he's obviously ripped dude, but compared to what he looks like in Titans and in Jack Reacher, it's like, did he eat another person? Like, how did he do that?
Yeah. Right. And he also, I think from Reacher, this is kind of off topic, I guess. Reacher is, I guess, like their biggest opening that they've had for a series. And he's on like a 6-movie deal or something that. He's going to be in Fast and Furious. Which is, I think he's like kind of coming more mainstream, which is cool. He's a great actor.
Yeah, I really like him. Again, I really like that show. I will say though, again, since we're off on the tangent, let's just keep going here because this has come up. I think that first Tom Cruise Jack Reacher movie is really good. And I know that he looks nothing, Tom Cruise, I mean, looks nothing like the way Jack Reacher is depicted in the stories and that Alan Richson is. Mm-hmm. But Alan Richson is not Tom Cruise when it comes to acting. And I think that the Tom Cruise version is a better performance, even though I really, really like that TV show. I'm happy to get more of it. But I don't know. I know that the creator was kind of upset that they went with Tom Cruise. But if I wrote a story and Tom Cruise wanted to act in it, I'd say yes.
I think like one thing that people mention is that like Reacher is not supposed to like talk very much, but he just goes off on dialogue lines for days in the show. I think Tom does more of like a silent kind of like silent but strong kind of thing that Alan Richson wasn't written as in Reacher.
Funnily enough, we're almost done with the tangent, so my apologies if you're listening. So I'm currently reading one of the Reacher books. Mm-hmm. And there are so many times it's funny that you say that, where the dialogue is like a character will say something and then it'll say Jack Reacher said nothing, and then the other person will talk again, like just continue their conversation. So like 4 times in a paragraph, it's Jack Reacher said nothing. Blah, 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 blah. Jack Reacher's. So he definitely in the books, he is not a very verbose person, unlike me. But let's get back into the show. So, David, are you now ready to enter the Fortress of Solitude, the repository of all the knowledge in the known universe as collected by the Kryptonians, to get a glimpse of where we came from as well as where we may be going?
Let's do it. I'm wet and ready.
Wet and ready, bro. If you wouldn't mind read that summary, please.
A summer beach party at Crater Lake takes a dramatic turn when Lois hits her head while jumping into the lake. Before Clark can save her, a mysterious swimmer named AC comes to her rescue, outswimming Clark and dragging him into an ecological fight against Lex Luthor's newest weapon, Leviathan.
And that's great and all, but it doesn't tell us what we really need to know. So let's examine some additional crystals and ask the important questions. Does this episode feature a vehicle crashed or otherwise destroyed?
Nope.
Does this episode feature someone falling unconscious for any reason?
Yes.
Does this episode feature someone in a hospital bed?
No.
Does this episode feature Clark telling or showing someone besides his forever crush Lana or his destined love Lois his powers and abilities?
Of course.
Follow up. Does that person die, lose their memory, or otherwise become a confidant of Clark?
They become a confidant.
Does this episode feature Clark using his powers irresponsibly?
I think it's one of the situations where it's he could have used them to do more. Yes, maybe.
Okay. We can do the debatable because we'll probably talk about it when we get there. Does Clark casually break and enter a business or residence or evil lair?
Yes.
Does this episode feature a moment where a character travels a seemingly long way to have a short conversation and then leave?
Yes.
Does this episode feature a conversation between two people where one person has their back to the other and is weirdly talking over their shoulder?
Yes.
Was the person talking weirdly over their shoulder Lex?
Yes, but not only him. It was AC.
Does this episode feature a particularly thirsty moment for one or more of our characters?
Oh, yes.
Thirsty.
Yep.
For characters, audience, the world, the universe, so many.
Me.
Yeah, me. Yeah.
My wife.
Does this episode feature a cheeky bit of dialogue that hints at or directly references the wider Superman mythos?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Does this episode feature a moment with a needle drop, where a contemporary song perfectly sums up a character's thoughts and or desires?
Nope.
I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then finally, does this episode feature a classic Smallville leap of logic, wherein the characters jump to a correct conclusion around who or what is behind some mysterious event, or otherwise solves a problem? Little to no actual information to base such conclusions.
No, I think Lex was pretty forthcoming with being a super maniacal guy this episode.
Yeah, it did seem though that AC had information. Like, we don't know how he got it, so maybe he had a leap of logic, but because we came into it with him already knowing things,
true,
we just kind of assumed he already knew them. But it's possible he was leaping logic like wild before we got there. Okay, so now that we have a clearer roadmap of where we're going, let's use our x-ray vision and look closely at this week's episode. So in her cold open, Clark and Lana are enjoying a day at Crater Lake when Chloe and Lois show up. She's back in town, Lois that is, and will be staying at the farm. She goes to dive into the water and hits her head. Clark goes in to rescue her, but is outswam to her by Arthur A.C. Curry, who makes an impression on Lois when he revives her. Clark doesn't seem to trust A.C. because he can swim faster than he can. So first time on the show, first time on a podcast ever. So I'm going to just put you right in the hot spot. What do you want to talk about cold open here?
Definitely the overuse of Lois being a woman, of course.
Wow. Okay. Yes. I mean, 20-year younger me had no problem with it. 47-year-old me didn't mind it too much, but it is so just blatant. It's a little bit of a like cringe.
Yeah. First time I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, here we go. Lois Lane. And a little bit of that now. I'm a younger guy. But of course, as I'm taking notes for the episode, I pause it, take notes, and my wife comes in right when Lois is on the dock, right when I pause it. So, of course. But
you watch the Avatar, the animated series?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. There's that meme I've seen where it says, when I watch Avatar and it's showing like Aang, like powering up or like in, doing this, that, and the other. And it says, like, when my wife watches me watch it, and it's that one episode where they all go to the beach and they like almost hyper-sexualized all of the female characters.
A children's show. Yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
It's wild. But I did think it was interesting too, because I mean, the show has never shied away from tantalizing or sexualizing other characters. Lana has stripped down to her underwear. She's been in bikinis before, but Lana is in like a one piece and Chloe is actually wearing like a cover, like a, not a muumuu is not the right, but it's basically like she's wearing, it looks like a bikini or a bathing suit, but she's actually fully covered, which only seems to highlight how revealed Lois is in this case. And I remember reading in the companion guide that was a big part of what they were going for. Like all the advertising on this episode was about like that scene of Lois climbing up out of the water to do her dive. I mean, it's just, it's just there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that, wow. And Lois is definitely used as like a linchpin of any male character being like a sexual or romantic relationship interest with her. And I was watching some of the previous that were aired back in 2005 or whatever, but and it was definitely just mainly centered around the love triangle that they were going for in that. And side note, on the bottom of one of the the previews, it was go to devoted to smallville.com. And I was curious because I used the Wayback Machine and it was okay. used way back then. Did you ever use that?
No, I don't remember that at all.
No, it seemed like a really popular website and it was even on their like official clip that they were showing for the show. So as someone who was like 4 when this was coming out, I didn't know if it was, used. Anyways, that has nothing to do with any of this.
But you know, at least they kind of turn it around when Lois is drugged out and AC gives her, you know, he resuscitates her. She spits up the water. She's absolutely soaking in AC as well. I mean, he's even less dressed than her, you know, but he's there in all his glory as well. Mm-hmm. It still feels a little different to me, but I mean, it is equal time in some ways because the camera really lingers on him as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. One thing that I did note was last week's episode, Chloe watched a nuclear launch. She was kidnapped, watched Clark get shot and killed a guy, but is not fazed by it and is never brought up again.
Yeah, I think that's her true meteor power, is that she's just unfazed.
Yeah.
Always. So we talked last episode, and again, I know those episodes haven't started coming out yet, but by the time people hear this, they will have heard that. At the end of the last episode, Clark had gotten shot. He died. Then he was revived. And he sort of showed the area of his body that's completely healed now, because once he got his powers back, so there's not even a scar there of the bullet wound. And there was a conversation around about how he can't show those scars because the absence of them would be revealing. And I talked about how I felt like that was actually a better motivation for Clark and Lana not being intimate than him worrying about how that would work superpower style. Mm-hmm. And then the very next episode, his shirt's off and he's just got a Band-Aid over where it's supposed to be. That's not going to survive his swim to go get Lois. Like, that's going to come off. And I don't know. I guess this was that episode. They're at the beach. Everybody's going to be, you know, shirtless or whatever. But it seemed like that was such a powerful thing that, you know, both metaphysical, you know, and literal scars that he can't reveal, because that would reveal too much to Lana. And yet we just come, just like Chloe's not fazed by killing a guy or being kidnapped or almost dying in, you know, nuclear Holocaust, but the Band-Aid covers all, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's definitely giving the writers more credit than they are due. Unfortunately, if they were to have taken that into being like a reason that he couldn't be with Lana or something like that. But also I think one thing I'm not trying to shout out another podcast, but the one thing from the Tom and Michael,
it gets brought up all the time. Everybody's brought it up. It's fine.
Yeah. Is that they film stuff out of order sometimes, like they're not filmed sequentially. So it could be that they had already planned this episode. They knew they were going to bring an Aquaman. They knew they were going to have a beach thing. And somewhere lost in there, Clark gets shot. They're like, oh crap, we got to, before we start filming, throw a band-aid on. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, it is kind of a one-off episode, this one, on its own. So it could be, I think, just a case of, they just don't really care.
That's not the point of the show, unfortunately. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. The one thing that I wrote was the classic, Lois, I thought you were in X place. Yeah. Because they don't know what to do with her on the show, even though at this point she's a series regular who's been on for a whole season. But
yeah, and it makes no sense for her to stay at the farm. Like, no. If she's back in town, she should be staying with Chloe, or she should be staying with Lana, or she should get an apartment. Like, it makes no sense for her to be staying at the farm. But
again, the Kents even like her.
Well, she did come in and help Jonathan save Martha. I think that helped mend a lot of fences that might have been there. You know,
very true.
So one of the things that came up in my research for season 5, and I do not remember this at all. I don't know if this was something that I was thinking of when I watched this show originally. I pretty much watched it as it was airing for most of the first 10 seasons or so. I think I fell off like season 6 and then circled back and watched them later on DVD or whatever. But apparently there was a fan theory that the Lois in the show was not the Lois that Clark was going to end up with. And that at some point in the show, she was going to die. And that Chloe, who had already used the alias as Lois Lane when she worked for the Daily Planet originally, would adopt that as a pseudonym. And that Chloe was actually the Lois that Clark would end up with. I do not remember thinking this. I don't remember hearing this. Though I wasn't really on like message boards and stuff back then. But this episode, it made me start to think, I can see where people had that thought, because there is a connection between Chloe and Clark right now, stronger, I think, than the Lana Clark relationship. It's not physical, but she knows his actual secret. She's helping him keep that secret. He confides in her. And then she's like, in last episode and right here, she keeps telling Clark, you cannot have a relationship with Lana if you're not going to be honest with her. It's not going to work. And I can see where that would be like, oh, maybe, because we know Lana isn't, like, anybody who knows anything about Superman knows that Lana eventually is not going to be the one. But then they introduced Lois, and it seemed very early, but obviously they didn't know they had 10 seasons at the time. And I kind of do get the idea of where that came from. I don't buy it, but I can at least see why in the early days of the message boards, people might have been like, here's my theory, and talking about Chloe as Lois Lane.
Maybe it's as you are a Chloe apologist, and your dream is that they end up together. Maybe it's just you haven't made your time machine yet, and you're going to go back and try to plant that theory.
Yeah, my rose-colored Chloe glasses. But so Lois does like a backwards dive off this little pier floating dock thing. She hits her head. It's like a board underwater. She goes unconscious. So right off the bat, ding, 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 we have an unconscious person. And Chloe, once again, realizing right away that something's wrong, Clark goes out there to save. And then once he's underwater, you know, like a missile, AC swims right past him, almost like blowing him out of the wake. Drags Lois out, gives her, you know, CPR, revives her. They have their little moment.
Maybe you ought to stick to the shallow until you learn how to swim, gorgeous.
Maybe you ought to try breath mint circle, boy.
Name's Arthur Curry. My friends call me AC.
And Clark's just glowering at him the whole time. I guess, and it makes sense because in the show, pretty much everybody he's ever met with powers has turned out to be evil, other than Bart. I think Bart is, well, no, there's been a couple other, like the hug guy kind of turned out to be a good guy. He used his powers to help people. But for the most part, every meteor infected person they've met has been evil. But Clark even says, I don't think he's meteor infected. I think I may be jumping around a little bit here, because he was faster than Clark, but Bart's faster than Clark on land. So is that why he think, I'm not sure why he jumped straight to, he can't be meteor infected. This is something else. That seemed like a bit of a stretch to me. So maybe that is even a leap of logic. Maybe we should change that classification.
So I think when I saw that note that you wrote, I think my kind of justification for it was, it is Smallville, small town, Smallville. He knows most of the people that have powers. It's like, oh, that's old man Jenkins. Oh, that's what's her name's mom or whatever. It's always stuff like that. So if he's already an outsider and he's kind of coming in and showing that he has abilities, it could be a case of, I've never seen this guy. How does he have powers if he's not from Smallville? Mm-hmm. Then again, Clark doesn't have a phone book in his head. Right. So probably not. But he was also probably just mad because the girls are looking at him and he's got shown up.
That's my question. Is he actually jealous? Because there's definitely, like, that's what the ladies think, that Lana and Chloe and Lois all at some point either think or outright accuse him of being jealous. That's exactly what it looks like to me. He's jealous. And it's not until he finds out that AC's actually a good guy that he sort of changes it. But even then, I think he is jealous. And so is it jealousy over Lois? Or is it just jealousy over someone else having powers? I think it's a little bit nebulous.
Yeah,
I
also want to, there's a balance that they're probably trying to, I would imagine they're trying to strike there with, because he's just getting his powers back. So that is that thing that is so fresh in his mind at the time. He's like, come on, I just got him back. I might get shown up. And,
right.
And all the girls on the beach, and this guy's got he's shredded right now. Yeah.
So. And he does, he's built better than Clark is. Clark doesn't need to have any muscles at all. He's, his powers are super, but AC definitely, he works out, bro. And then my last, this little note here is that Crater Lake is a lake, not connected to the oceans. So I'm assuming, because AC went to Miami University, he knows how to drive a car and stuff, but where was he before this? Because he wasn't on the beach. I know apparently the Leviathan facility is also attached, but it seems a little bit, I don't know. It just seemed a little bit weird that he came out of nowhere in a lake.
I see what you're saying.
It's an enclosed.
Where was he at in the scene before that?
Yes.
That's a fair point. It is a pretty small beach, but I don't think that he knew Leviathan was in the water yet, because he didn't get attacked by it. So I don't think that Yeah, that is kind of weird. Why was he there?
Why was not? He there?
Yeah, that is weird. One thing that I noted, so because at this point, I think that they knew that they were building towards a Justice League or something similar. Chloe says, before Lois hits her head, Chloe says,
"We didn't ask for a world that needs heroes, but the truth is we do."
Keyword being heroes. So I thought, is it before this season, is it ever mentioned other heroes in the surrounding world? Because minor Superman and Lois spoilers. I don't know if you're caught up.
No, I'm not, but it's fine.
It is very minor. It's that that world is on its own. There's no Flash. There's no Green Arrow or anything on that world. It's its own. And in that one, like, they don't mention anybody else. But then very definitively in the end of season two, they say, like, he is the only one on that planet. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I can't really remember if in seasons 1 through 4, if it's ever mentioned heroes.
I don't think so.
So I think maybe it's just that they were kind of realizing, like, oh, we're going to try to expand this universe. And that, I think that line of dialogue from Chloe kind of shows that.
And then the last thing, I guess, actually the last thing is, so you probably are aware, dear listener and David as well, that this episode was received pretty well to the point that Miles and Al developed another show, specifically mm-hmm. an Aquaman show, which they took to the CW. They filmed a pilot. The pilot was received pretty well, but then it was never picked up to series. But this is where they actually discovered Justin Hartley. He was the one that was cast as AC for that show. So they weren't going to go with Alan. They were going to change actors and do their very own separate show. I went on YouTube. You can find scenes from the episode. You can see the trailer for the episode. Again, keep in mind it's 2005. It looks terrible. It is not surprising to me at all that it didn't get picked up. From what I read, it seemed like it was pretty well received, but I'm not surprised at all. I think water, it just adds a whole new development and problem set to, like, trying to film things and, like, the mm-hmm. superpowers and everything. And it looked really cheap to me then.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Isn't it Adrienne Palicki in that one?
Yes,
isn't
she's also in that one.
And then she's also in the failed Wonder Woman pilot that they tried to do. So
she's in this show. She was in this show as Kara.
Yep. It's so interesting.
Was it Kara? Well, she was the girl had amnesia that...
The Kara, quote-unquote Kara. Right. I wrote a note about the Justin Hartley thing as well. Was that... So because this one was well-received, the one that they filmed was never... meant to be the same universe, I would imagine, because it's a different actor.
I don't know for sure. I don't know what
that's the plan so weird.
Was.
It's such a weird little black hole of what are you guys doing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess since it didn't go to film, obviously it's not canon. But even in this one, later AC talks about how he lived with his dad at the lighthouse and his mom died when he was a baby, which is the quote unquote Aquaman, the current DCEU version of the character that we know. So that means there's an Atlantis.
Royalty? Is he just not known about it yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't know. Does he know his heritage, or is he just like, I can swim really fast, or does he know that he's half whatever? Obviously, we don't get the answer to those questions. So
last thing. I hate so much the Smallville trend, the early 2000s, but happens in Smallville. Shortening a name because it's not cool to call him Arthur. AC is way cooler. Or later on in the show when they introduce Jimmy Olsen, and in the very first episode that he's in, like, no, call me James. But then never again in the show do they call him James. It's just not cool to call him Arthur, I guess. It's just, I hate calling him AC. It's so dumb.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either, but it does sort of fit his surfer bro, like the persona that he has here.
Yeah.
But I also agree. All right, so with that out of the way, let's jump into the first act. If you don't mind, will you read that summary, please?
Clark is late to his first class with Dr. Milton Fine, who makes an impression on Clark. After class, he questions Clark's relationship with Lex and offers him a job as a research assistant, but Clark passes. AC chats up Lois at the Talon and gets her to go on a swim date. As they're about to kiss, AC has a reaction to a sonic attack of some sort that leaves him dazed and bleeding and killing all the fish in the lake.
So I want to start here talking a little bit about Milton Fine. So again, I went to the Google machine, and Milton Fine is a character from the Superman comics. He was introduced in 1988 as a, basically like a sideshow mentalist, like that he thought he was a huckster, but he actually had real powers. And then this ended up attracting an alien entity who ended up possessing him, yada, yada, yada. He's Brainiac. And I know there's different versions of the Brainiac story where more in line with this show, actually, where it's an AI supercomputer on Krypton. But I thought that was an interesting connection that they used Milton Fine as the character. And I just want to say right off the bat, I really like Milton Fine as a professor. I would have loved to have been in his class. I think he's a really good lecturer.
I feel the opposite. I think he's a D-bag. He seems like a jerk.
Fair. Very fair.
But I'm a college student, so I probably don't like any professors right now.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed in this scene is I think the music in this scene is so weird. It is just temp music, so it doesn't impact the scene at all. I think Smallville does this often. They'll just play some weird horn in it. I wrote a note about it in a later scene. I think it's the final scene. There's just like a random piano playing, but it doesn't make you feel goofy. It doesn't make you feel tense. It doesn't make you feel anything. It's just weird horns. I just don't like it.
Just noise.
Yeah.
So it's possible that they are trying to build some disquiet, not make you feel uncomfortable around this, Milton Fine. Cause we know from episode one that's the thing from the goo from the spaceship, unless people have forgotten in four episodes. Like, I assume the show thinks we know that that's not a human. So maybe they're just trying to like hedge their bets a little bit. So every time he's on the screen, there's a little bit of like, this is weird, make you feel a little bit weird type of thing.
That's fair.
He does call out Clark specifically, like, what are you going to do to affect the world around you for generations? And then he goes off about Lex, and he is very much not kind to Lex, comparing him to Hitler, Napoleon, Stalin, and Clark actually stands up for Lex. But my question is why? Because their relationship right now is not in a good place. And I don't necessarily think Clark would jump in like, yeah, screw that guy. But it surprised me a little bit that he would stand up for him after he got into a fist fight like 2 days ago to prove that he was human and punched Lex and Lex punched it. Like, I just felt like that relationship was more broken than this scene would have me believe.
Okay. I think that's fair, but I would say Clark knows what Lex has gone through more than anybody else. So he understands, like, while he does have a personal, not vendetta, but for lack of a better word, vendetta against him, he recognizes that a lot of stuff is like the plant closing down, for example, was all put on Lex, but it wasn't his fault. So I think a lot of that is thrown his way when he's not deserving of it. And obviously we as the audience know that. But regardless, I think as a professor, Milton Fine is a very biased professor. And I had a huge annoyance with this in the show or in the episode. He says at one point, gone from feeding people to killing them, which is true. He's a villain, but it is very dramatic. And like, he doesn't have cold hard facts probably. And he probably can't present them.
Well, he does because he's a sentient AI, but, and he knows all his information. But the Milton Fine persona.
Exactly. So that is a. And then, but he makes such an example of the point about history being a matter of perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think it could be used kind of for and against him. I like that he says history is a matter of perspective, because as Brainiac, I think that really works. It's like, Krypton's destruction, was it people's impotence and not paying attention to the issues that were breaking the world apart? Mm-hmm. Or was it that it was just going to happen no matter what? And then Jor-El's interference on that we all know through the Superman stories and whatever. But so I think that leaning into, like, leaning away from the Milton Fine and leaning into the Brainiac, the history is a matter of perspective, I think really works for that character.
Mm-hmm. The Lex Clark thing, the thing that really comes to my mind is that almost like a familial bond. Like, I can talk crap about my family, but you can't.
Yeah.
that might be a little bit of it, is that because he doesn't really, I think, care for Lex right now, but it is different when someone else, and is so pointedly and aggressively saying those types of things about someone you did have a positive relationship with for a long time.
So at one point, they were, to me, it seemed like they were closer than him and Pete.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Pete certainly thought so too. Though, I mean, again, I get that Brainiac is a sentient AI super genius. So I guess that Brainiac was able to figure out that Clark was enrolled at Kansas State or Central Kansas A&M or whatever it is, knew what his class schedule would be, and somehow manipulated things to become the professor. Like, he would have to have done that really, like, you know, by the time Clark enrolled, there's only like a month or two. He would have had to have, because I don't think Brainiac was smart enough to know, hey, Clark's going to join this class. So he just became a professor, started a class knowing Clark would enroll. I think it has to be thought of backwards that Clark was enrolled in this history 101 class, whatever. So did he kill the professor? Did he like go in and hack and make a new instance of that? And then, you know, I'm sure he manipulated the computers to give himself a, you know, record of existence, whatever. But even that is almost like I can more readily believe he's a goop monster out of that spaceship than he was able to make this work out.
Yeah, I wonder if Milton Fine was the professor and he just took over his life, potentially. Maybe then, that's
was no one else on campus knows what Milton Fine looks like?
That's fair. Because
he gave his face, like, you know, if he could T-1000 into anybody, but he showed us what he looked like as soon as he came out of the ship.
Yeah, that's true. That is not explained.
That's not what the show is worried about. So the next scene is we're at the Talon, and Lois is a bit daydreamy, it seems, and we get another song here, and it's Waiting for Your Letter by the Carey Brothers. Again, I did not see any lyrical connection to what was going on. AC is wearing the, you know, classic orange and green ensemble, which Lois calls out. And the biggest thing that hit me is, one, I think AC comes across way too bro-y. I don't like his personality here. And I get he's supposed to be kind of, you know, militant, but he's an environmentalist. Like, I should be on their side. But just the way he treats Lois, it almost seems like he's negging her a lot, how he says she can't swim. So I wasn't a fan of the AC persona, but it's clear that Lois is attracted to him. Like, I think we can see that very clearly. And then the way she's kind of mean to him just makes me think back to Clark about she's kind of mean to Clark the same way she's mean to AC. Is that a hint that she does have feelings? Like, are we supposed to start putting things together? Like, oh, she treats Clark the way she treats AC and she wants to kiss AC.
Sure. That's fair. I think that's a fair assumption. I mean, cause she's not mean to everybody. She's not mean to Lana or Chloe or anybody, the mom, Pa, Kent. I think that's fair.
Certainly possible. I don't know. Then we go back to school and Clark chases down Dr. Fine after class. And this is, again, another thing I really liked about the Milton Fine character. He says, when Clark says he wants to apologize for being late, he says,
I'm sorry to bother you, but I know I got off on the wrong foot. I wanted to apologize.
I'll never apologize. If you're going to show up late, at least do it with conviction, Mr. Kent.
Like, I just, I like that. And so here's where Clark's trying to, again, apologize for Lex a little bit. And, you know, Dr. Fine's like, I'm looking into it, but hey, I need a research assistant. But, you know, do you want to take on the role? And Clark declines, but we're going to circle back to that. But there was a moment there where he quotes Groucho Marx, and Clark calls him on it. He says, German philosophy is easy, comedy is hard. That cracked me up for some reason. I don't know why, but I absolutely laughed out loud at that.
One thing I wanted to circle back to was back in the Talon, three things.
Sure.
One, does Arthur need to wear swim shorts?
All the time.
All the time. I think it's necessary.
Yes, be ready
for him
to get in the water. You know,
is true. When I wrote a quote down for my wife, she was watching pretty much only when Arthur was on the screen. She said, he has very white teeth. It's like a filter compared to his glistening tan skin, which is insane. And I could not stop looking at that. And then he said, those pretty lungs to Lois, which is such a weird line. He said, I want to get back into those pretty lungs or something like that.
I don't remember.
What a weird guy.
Yeah, that's, oh man.
What weird dialogue that they wrote for some of this.
I don't like this characterization of him. And
it just goes into the bro-y thing that you said.
It's very too bro-y. Again, very sort of neggy. Like later again talks about her swimming and has, you know, she can't swim multiple times. It seems to be working on Lois because obviously she is attracted to him. But yeah, I kind of wish I liked AC more than I do because I don't really like him a lot here.
Anyways, back to the school stuff. There was, I think, a lot to unpack with the dialogue that was written between Milton and Clark there.
Sure.
One thing that I really liked was him saying that he took the time to search through a database and that he made something about making deductions. I didn't write the exact quote.
It was about how he knew Clark and Lex were friends. He said it was just a simple deduction.
Yep. Yeah. And I think with like the budget of the show and the kind of realism, as realistic as you can get with Superman, that they tried to like force onto the show without him physically really being Brainiac, I think that those lines of dialogue worked really well for that character and leaning into he's not a human. He is like, as well, while we know that, like looking back at it, I think that that dialogue really leans really well into him being Brainiac.
So as someone who went to college, none of my professors took the time to look at student IDs compared to their class roster and memorize names to faces and knew my name when I walked into class. Most of my professors still didn't know my name after the semester was over, even if I did show up every day and got a good grade in class. So that right off the bat was something like, that's not a thing. I'm sure there are some people in the world that do that. I'm not going to say no one, but I think that's like 5% of professors maybe could and do that. So that definitely was something that stuck out to me as like, no.
Oh, yeah. And then I wrote, the guy that makes a point about history being a matter of perspective hates Lex, but wants to write a paper on him, and then also wants Clark, who is very close to Lex. There's going to be bias in this research, and that is undeniable.
Very, very true. Great, great call out there. So we go back to the lake. So now we have our date that was set up. So, you know, AC promises Lois he would teach her how to swim. And there was a note in the companion guide that the lake that they're filming in is glacier runoff. So the water is absolutely freezing. And it was miserable to film those scenes. And there was actually like a hot tub set just on the beach outside of camera view. And in between takes, everyone would jump into the hot tub and warm up.
On Inside of You, Katie Lotz, who's in Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow, because so much of the first couple seasons of Arrow are filmed on an island, Leon Yu, Mandarin for Purgatory, she said it was like horrible filming those scenes because it's all in Canada, which probably is, maybe not probably, but it could be a contributing factor as to why they didn't do the Aquaman show, because they'd always be in freezing cold water.
Oh, that would be miserable. Miserable. So there's again more of that bro-y stuff where Lois is swimming, kind of like sort of like, not doing the backstroke, but she's sort of swimming backwards and AC is just trailing after her, and he basically says, you know, he's just enjoying the view. So he's just ogling her, you know. And then they decide to race and she cheats a little bit. She's a count of three and then one, two, and then she starts swimming. And of course he lets her get a little bit ahead, and then again she should have realized like he didn't pass her. Like, how did he possibly do that? But again, she's not really infatuated on here.
At this point, is she conscious that there are metahumans in the world?
It has to be like she's been possessed by a witch at this point. I can't think of like specifics, but yeah, she has to know there's metahumans or infected humans at this point, I would assume. I can't remember off the top of my head because she gets knocked out a lot, her and Lana. But I think that, again, once you're possessed by a witch, I think all bets are off about things, you know?
I did really like the line about, I swim with the seals. Yeah. I thought that was fun. That was like, I think, well written. That was funny.
Yeah. But it seems like she should have realized, like, it seemed to me like she thought he also meant the Navy SEALs, but clearly he didn't, but she didn't really question it, anything like that.
She's too taken aback by those white teeth of his.
Yeah. So I think my notes are here a little bit weird. I don't think I typed well, but doesn't he go in for a kiss and she pulls away? Like, I don't, or does she lean in like they're going to kiss and then that's when?
No, he leans 95% of the way in. Okay. That is all him.
Okay. I thought so because there's a scene later when they do kiss and I want to touch on something I saw there. But basically the Leviathan that we haven't heard it called that yet is being tested in the waters of Crater Lake. And apparently is some sort of sonic device. Why can he hear it? He's not in the water.
I wrote the exact same thing later.
Why is it affecting him?
Yep. I wrote that later because if it's that loud, so a line that's written that Lex says somewhere in the next scene, in the next act, is he says, it's a sonic cannon enough to break a submarine in half. If they've been testing this and you can hear it above water, why hasn't Clark heard it with his super hearing? And then also, yeah, what you said, which is if he can hear it above water, he doesn't have super hearing as far as we know,
right?
Like Clark does, unless he's in the water. So I thought that was weird as well.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, but it does. He stumbles in the water. He tries to swim at it like he's going to destroy it, and then he gets repelled back, and that image is captured by security cameras because Lex, he puts a security camera underwater, but not in his evil lair. Again, more on that later. But he stumbles out of the water. He's got bleeding from his ears. I did not write he went unconscious because I don't think we clearly see that he did. He does later, but I'm not counting he was going unconscious here. And then we see a bunch of fish floating up as whatever this device is. Obviously, it's killing the marine life. So I assume that's why it's affecting him. But again, when he's not in the water, I don't have enough information to know why that makes sense. If he was still swimming, then yes. But the fact that he was above water doesn't make sense to me there.
Is it called Crater Lake because it's a big old crater from a meteor?
Yep.
Okay. That's what I figured. No, that's it though.
Okay. All right. So in our second act, Lex is developing a sonic weapon, codenamed Leviathan, and doesn't care about the ecological side effects. Lois and AC make some kissy time until Clark interrupts them. Chloe does some research. Clark is sort of a jerk. AC goes to destroy a Leviathan, but Clark gets in the way. So this scene with Lex, in fact, Lex, this whole episode is just evil, you know, I mean, and gleefully evil, which I'm fine with.
Uncharacteristically evil. Yes. I'm not.
I mean, I want him to be evil at this point. I'm fine with it. That's where he's going. But then it seemed like him, it's like an up and down thing. It's not like a natural progression towards evil.
Yeah.
It seems like he's on a roller coaster and went really high to evil and then later he'll come back down. But like, he's just the way he like tortures AC later and here where he's just like, I don't care about it. Just seems like he's just, you know, mustache twirling evil top hat, screw snowman melting evil.
I remember as excited as I was to watch this episode for this, I was dreading seeing Lex because I remember specifically this episode had a huge problem with the way Lex was portrayed. He is meant to be evil, mustache twirling, but not yet. Not this Lex, not yet. Mm-hmm. And we don't, as far as I remember, we don't see him torturing people until they needed a villain for the episode and Lex was disposable in there. So they just threw him into this, I feel like.
And I think Mike Rosenbaum does a great job. Like, I enjoy seeing Lex evil, but I don't like the characterization. Like, it seems like it's come too soon. Like, I don't feel like we've earned this level of evil.
I agree. Yeah,
it stuck out to me as a little bit weird. We also get a little over the shoulder here when the scientist who seems very excited about the weapon they've developed does express some concern about the marine life, and Lex is like, I don't care. And he's walking out over his shoulder, kind of calling off to her. So we're back at the farm now. This is the scene where AC and Lois are talking, and he's just trying to play it off like he has an ear infection. And then she touches his head and she's like, actually, you feel kind of cold. There was a really funny line I like.
You really don't listen, do you?
No, I try not to. I find it distracting.
I thought that was really well said, really well delivered. That was great. AC tries, you know, again, he's trying to be all bro-y and stuff. And then they go in for a kiss, or he goes in for a kiss. And at first she pulls back and then she kisses him. And I really feel like this is a thing where Lois has to be the initiator. Like, I think she's fine with kissing him, but she couldn't be kissed. She had to kiss him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm supposed to think that, but that's definitely what I saw in that scene, is that she's fine with it, but she has to be in control.
Yeah. I wrote, as a like kind of a rebuttal to that, is that it's more she's like, hey, we're kissing because I want to, not because I owe you anything. Because it definitely kind of comes across that way, I think, with the way that he has been pushy the whole episode. She's like, I'm kissing you because I want to, not because, which I think is good. I think that is in line with who Lois is.
Yeah, no,
the way Lois is written. Yeah, I like that.
Interesting to kind of track that she's clearly attracted to him. She clearly wants to kiss him, but she doesn't want to be kissed. She wants to kiss, I guess. I don't know if that's exactly true, but that's the way it looked and felt to me. And then I thought it was funny because Clark comes home and interrupts them. And we didn't touch on it, but in the cold open, when Lois says she's going to be staying at the farm, she's like, don't worry, you two bunnies, you know, you can do whatever you want. I won't bother you. And then the reverse of that's what's actually happening. Lois is getting frisky and then Clark interrupts him. I thought that was kind of a funny setup and payoff to that bit. So anything else there before we move on?
Nope. Not in that scene.
All right. So we go to the loft where Chloe is doing the Chloe thing, and she's looked up and found everything she can about AC. He goes to the University of Miami. Shocker. He's on the swim team. He does have a criminal record. He broke into SeaWorld and freed some dolphins, which is actually, I think, part of the trailer for the AC, for the Aquaman TV show, that the, that version, Justin Hartley character, breaks free some dolphins. It's mentioned in the trailer portion. Chloe doesn't see the issues. She's like, seems like a pretty good guy to me.
Yeah, the scene opens with Clark saying, Lois is all over this guy. And it's like, he is so jealous. He just doesn't realize how much he likes Lois. Yeah.
He's new to Smallville, so he's not meteor infected. And this one, Clark kind of shares, well, he's actually met some other people who have powers that weren't meteor infected. And she seems interested. He says, yeah, I knew this guy. He, you know, he's too fast for some good. Chloe knows Bart. They met. I guess maybe he's trying to keep his secret for him. But at this point, once you tell her you're an alien, I kind of feel like you're all in. Why not just say, hey, you remember that kid Bart? Yeah, he can actually run faster than I can. I feel like that would have been a cool moment for him to share that rather than to try to play coy and not say that. But maybe, I guess I do see him not telling Bart's secret, but it, I don't know. I don't think it matters really.
I think it just got lost amongst the once a week he goes through a world ending event, that that was just another one in the pile that he just hadn't gotten to yet.
Yeah, true. But I definitely think, you know, Chloe thinks Clark is jealous. I completely agree. The question I have is it Lois jealous or is it superhero jealous or maybe a little bit of both?
At the time, him and Lana are dating. So he's probably, I think that's where I'm torn, is like, as the Clois shipper, I really want it to be that he's jealous of Lois of because of Lois. But I think with him being with Lana at the time and what he's like, always like what he really has always dreamed of, maybe it's not. Maybe it is more of a power thing.
We will have to see how things progress.
Yeah, I wonder if they get together at the end of the show.
Yeah, I don't know how that works out. So we go back to the Talon, and AC is chugging some water. And I kind of mentioned this, I think it was the last episode. Again, my brain's starting to fry. But it's the one where Lana and Clark wake up in bed after having fallen asleep, that I just really like Lois or Lana in that moment more than I think I've ever liked her character. I really thought Kristen did a good job. I thought it was really well writing and everything. Mm-hmm. But she has almost like an old style black and white comedy bit when she's watching him drink that water. And I think that's like one of the most effective bits of writing in the episode, because it clearly conveys to us that he is constantly chugging water because she's like just staring at him drinking that water. I think she makes a little bit of a joke about it later. But that's a great way to, like, we convey a lot of information with a little bit of effort. True, and it also sets up the dehydration thing later.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in any show, you see cups are very clearly empty and actors barely try to hide it. Unless it's a clear cup and they have to make a point of it, then the cup is like always clear. Like, I'm drinking something and then later on I'm like falling on the floor because I got poison. But yeah, I think that is true. I think it is a good way to convey the dehydration thing later, especially.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching Gilmore Girls. My wife loves the show. I actually really enjoy it as well. I know I'm not the target audience for that show, but that was one of the things that my mind would melt, if you've never seen that show, of how often it is clear that they do not have anything in the coffee cups that they are carrying around.
For some reason, a lot of CW shows or like teen drama shows have like, it's just because they need a set. So it's like the Talon or Central City Jitters or whatever, like there's always an empty coffee cup in these shows.
So there's one line here that I don't know if it's supposed to be funny because it doesn't land like a joke. It's sort of lost. But when Clark's given, you know, AC business, like, why are you in Miami and what are you doing? Like, he's like, you know, clearly like macho and like, I know more about you, I've done research, whatever. And Clark says, am I the only one who thinks there's something fishy about this guy? Like, that is clearly an intentional line, but it's not said like for a laugh line.
Yeah, I love that line. I think it was perfect with the corny Kansas boy. It was exactly something fishy. Like that.
Did you watch the new He-Man Revelation that was on Netflix?
I'm almost done. I've not finished it yet, but I'm most of the way through.
So I think it's earlier on, but there's the merman joke. Basically, it's the same exact joke. Merman shows up, and at one point, one of the characters goes, does anybody else think there's something fishy about that guy? Mm-hmm. It's like the exact same line.
I really liked Kristen in this scene. I think she did a very good job of being the girlfriend at the party whose boyfriend is acting like a D-bag, and he's standing right behind her, and she's looking all around, and it's just like she's embarrassed by him. And I think that she did a great job physically conveying that.
So yeah, she's definitely, the last couple episodes impressed me more. And I like Lana more now than I have in a very long time. And then just out of nowhere, AC's like, "Hey, got to bounce." Maybe did he have a watch on? Did he know that he needed to turn off Leviathan, or did he just need enough height? I'm assuming this is the next day because they were kissing at night. Then we're at the loft, they're doing research, and then they're at the Talon. So it just seemed like a weird, like arbitrary decision that now is the time I'm going to infiltrate the evil lair with C4 that I have hidden somewhere. I don't know. It just seems so out of the blue.
Yeah. I think it's just, we had a scene in the Talon and we just kind of needed to move the story along. And that's just, they were just like, oh, gotta go.
Yep. Just, we only got 28 minutes left. We got to get to it.
Yeah. A lot of the, ignoring the clerk drilling him and interrogating him, a lot of the dialogue that went into the episode or into the scene specifically was like the ham-fisted, just AC throwing out dialogue about the environment and trying to send a good message. And I think this is like a really interesting episode in the case of, because Superman is such a popular character and draws an audience, like they're going to try to use this as a medium to tell important, to talk about important topics while it's still just a goofy superhero show or whatever. But like, they also tried it in like a future episode with immigration.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then like back in like the 1930s, Superman broadcast taking down the KKK and stuff like that. Like they've always tried to like use Superman and as like a good audio or like a good portrayer of a medium to put out a good message, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm fumbling through the words, but, and I think
Superman's a hero who does good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as goofy as this episode is, I think that they are trying to put out a genuine good message, and it's cool to see that.
Mm-hmm.
As a dork, it's cool to see a good message being spread, which is cool. I just like that. It was ham-fisted, but it was cool.
Yeah. I would agree with that. So Clark, you know, suspecting that AC's up to something, he's just like, oh, you're right, I've been a jerk, I'm going to go apologize. And then disappears for hours. I'm assuming no one, you know, again, no one questions it. But there is this little moment we get where we had just Lois and Lana together. And Lois says something along the lines like, I don't know how you put up with him. And I almost wish the camera would have lingered. Like, I always get to talk about how they linger on Lana too long and it makes her do weird things with her face. But you have Lois and Lana in the same scene together, no one else really around. I just would like the camera to give me like 3 more seconds of that, because I think that's kind of a big moment in a way. Like, I'm sure they've been together, but I can't think of any time. Well, I guess that's not true. Actually, there were other times where they were just them and Clark wasn't there, but they were being killed, hunted down by T2 1000 knockoff back then or something. I don't know, but I just thought it was an interesting moment.
Yeah, I think their relationship is underdeveloped. Do you know what's that rule or like whatever?
The Bechdel test.
Yeah, the Bechdel test. Exactly. They are a perfect example of the Bechdel test.
Yep. They never talk about anything if it's not involving Clark.
Exactly. Yep.
So AC goes to the Leviathan facility. He breaks in. Clark is shadowing him, following him along. AC gets in there. He looks at papers. They all have Luther Corp all over them. So, you know, the branding, definitely Luther Corp has that in mind, even with their doomsday dot devices. And then he decides he's going to just blow it up. He pulls out some C4. Couple questions here. One, is he not super strong? I mean, because later he like breaks off out of the gurney once he gets rehydrated. Could he not have just ripped it apart? Like, did he need C4? Did he need to get out of the water to put C4 on it? I feel like this was a very clunky way for him to attempt to blow it, to destroy it, giving Clark a chance to misunderstand and show his powers at the same time.
Yeah.
I get that's what had to happen, but I kind of felt like it was just, I didn't think the writing there was very strong.
Yeah, it could have. Where did he get the bomb? Where did he get a bomb? Maybe it was just that they needed a way for Lex to see him as more of a bad guy, like specifically using a bomb. But also, like you make a good point, like he does have powers. And like 2 minutes later, when him and Clark fight in the water, you see that he's hydrokinetic or whatever. Like he can move water.
Right.
And move it at a really good force enough to knock Clark back. So he could have, I feel like he could have used that.
Those powers to, right. It didn't mm-hmm. need to be a bomb.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe you could argue that he wants to hide his powers and he doesn't want to make it obvious that a water powered person did this, but still the bomb.
Not like he's been super subtle so far.
Right. Absolutely. Once again, got a question. Why are there no cameras? Because we see yeah. Clark put a bomb against
stuff?
His stomach and just hold on to it and contain the blast. One CCTV camera in the corner, whole different show.
I wondered, so we see that Clark is standing at the beach or at the edge of the water, and we see Arthur swim up to the evil lair. Mm-hmm. And then Clark runs in, I think from another direction, not from the same direction that the water came from. But if Clark, just hypothetical, your opinion, if Clark were to run on water or to swim in water, which do you think that he would have a better chance of beating Arthur at?
Interesting. Well, I know from the episode with Bart that Bart was able to run on water and Clark didn't try.
Oh, now, true.
We've done the math before that he's definitely fast enough he could have, mm-hmm. but he just doesn't have, it's like flying. If he just believed he could fly now, but he just apparently doesn't. But I do think, yes, I think if he ran on the water, he probably could outpace or have a, he certainly can't outswim AC, but he probably mm-hmm. could outrun him if he was on top of the water.
Because it took him forever to get to that lair.
That's true. But he also had to go all the way through, like I'm assuming he went around and came through like the regular entrance, mm-hmm. but then he had to break through doors, go around security.
Yeah, he wasn't wet, so he definitely didn't come through the water.
Right. So did he not have other evidence of evil lab? You know, there are no evil lab vibes that he went through to get there. I don't know. But we get the super fight, and I can't help but think this was a big deal as well. As much as the advertising was focused on Lois in the bikini, I also have to think that there was probably a lot of advertising around this fight. The companion guide I have talked a lot about, this was a big deal for them. It was very hard for them to do. And basically the stunt coordinator had to get with the director, like, what do you want this to look like? They kind of mapped it out. And then he had to go figure out how the F do you do that? And essentially what happened, they had a big tank and there were grid lines of ropes on pulleys. So like every so many feet in every direction, there were ropes and the actors were basically just tied to them. And so they could pull certain ropes, almost like marionette, and pull them in the direction they wanted them to go to reflect the punching and swimming.
That's crazy. And that thing.
And again, it looked pretty good. It looked mm-hmm. better than the yeah. Aquaman trailer that I saw. But it also shows how powerful AC is. Cause you said the, you know, the aquatic tenetic or whatever you would say, he like does a wind up super punch and knocks Clark completely out of the water and onto the beach, stunning him, ending the fight. So I think it's fair to say that AC won that fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And do we ever see him use that power again in the future Justice League episodes and stuff?
I don't think so.
Which
I don't remember
so...
the JLA episode. Is that season 7, I think, when they did?
I think
the
so.
Team up?
Dude, and that, is, okay, side note, it is, as someone that's watching Fresh, they do not do a good job on these DVD collections to where, like, I open it and it's just the Justice League really big across the front of it, or it's Evil Lex or something. It is so hard. And then you open up the DVD menu and it just is like, here's what happens to the entirety of the season. So I have to close my eyes every time I put in a DVD because I didn't want to know what happened.
Oh man, that's rough. Yeah, again, it's hard to think about watching this fresh the first time through now with all this information. All right, so anything else, or you want to jump into the third act, please?
No, we can move on.
If you don't mind, will you read that summary?
Lois accuses Clark of being jealous. AC wants Clark's help shutting down Leviathan, but Clark wants to do it through Lex and not explosives. AC agrees, but that conversation does not go well. As AC is about to head out, he is hit with a tranquilizer dart and falls unconscious.
We cut to the barn, and Clark is just right in the middle of explaining how he saw AC trying to blow up something. There are so many questions Lois should be asking that Clark cannot answer, but she just completely bypasses. So does she think he's lying? And this is Clark's way to try to dissuade her. He's just going to make up this entire evil Leviathan bomb plot or does she not care? Does she think it's true, but he's only telling her? Because like, I was like gobsmacked that Clark is just telling her all this information when all she has to say is like, well, how did you get there? How did he get there? What happened to the bomb? Like, there are so many questions that are at the top of my mind that Lois just doesn't care about.
Yeah, super dismissive for sure. The I think it is crazy all the things that they've been through, how much trust a character like Lois is willing to put in somebody that she just met that day. Mm-hmm. Being like AC. Yeah, it's just like a sticky note. Would you like one question and Clark falls apart? He's a terrible liar anyway. So
terrible. And again, like Lois shouldn't trust Clark, you know, without question, but they have had enough experience together to know that Clark generally and genuinely wants to help people. Like she said that before, that, you know, she's admired that he truly seems to be like an awshucks kind of guy that just wants to help people. He never gets the benefit of the doubt from nobody. Like anytime there's a question about why he's doing something, everyone just assumes that he's evil or turn. At no point do they go, you know, why is Clark the one telling, like, I don't know. It just seems like at some point they should be like, I'm going to trust you until I know otherwise, rather than assuming that you're lying until it's proven the other way. I don't know. We get a little AC over the shoulder here as he comes to talk to Clark about the powers. Surprisingly, they don't just start fighting. He doesn't like hit him with heat vision and, you know, flash fry him. You just dealt with a super, what you think is a super villain who outfought you. But no, we have a conversation and AC once again drops all kinds of information. He knows about Leviathan. He knows that they're going to test it to the Pentagon in 4 hours. Again, how does he know this information? Was it on a post-it note that he looked at before Clark got there? Who knows?
A line that I loved so much was, come on, Superboy, with you on the turf and me in the surf. I loved it so much. It just works so well.
I like that one as well. But basically Clark's like, okay, we're going to deal with this, but we're going to deal with it my way. We're going to go to Lex. And obviously that's not the way AC wants to handle it, but he finally agrees. He goes, sure, let's go talk to the cue ball, which, yeah, should make friends with somebody for being bald. It's also a funny line.
He, in the last, in the episode with Bart, isn't that the one where he says, I wish I had a ponytail?
Yes.
So it's always these Justice League members dogging on Lex.
Yep. So they cut to the mansion and we see, the first thing we see is Lex is looking at underwater CCTV. So they have a camera underwater, not in the lab. And it's of the device and it's like basically trying to render the image of when AC tried to attack it earlier. And it's not quite fully rendered. It's like in the process. And then later it's going to fully clear, not fully clear, but clear enough to know that we can see that it was AC that was the one that was down there. But basically we just have this whole conversation. Lex again seems to be like gleefully evil and just like, well, not evil here, but just like playfully, like the way he interacts with them and he's like cuts them off and lies to them and dissuades them. And there's a part near the end where Clark says, you know, my professor said this about you being the devil. And Lex has a line about, did you tell him about my pitchfork? Like just like the way he delivered the line, it was just like so kind of odd, but he just seemed like gleeful thinking that someone thought he was evil. And then, you know, Clark saying, no, I stood up for you, but now I think I may have made a mistake. The Lex characterization again just seemed kind of weird, and I felt like that should have had a more powerful effect. But I mean, Lex is still full on evil this episode for any reason. So I went through that kind of fast. So feel free to jump in anything you want to talk about here.
No, nothing in particular. I had very few notes on the scene. An example of what you were talking about with how he's just like being very dismissive of Clark and being and making him feel dumb, kind of. He says, if you think I'm going to bow down to the thuggish tactics of extremists, you don't know me very well. They're not being thuggish at all, but he's definitely like negging, I think is like the word that like would be used here. He's like making them feel dumb to gain something over time for himself, like make them feel like, oh, maybe we're not as in the red as we think we are. Twice in this scene was used the lines. I thought it was just funny dialogue writing. The days of blank, blank, blank are over. The days of you barging in and the days and giving sage advice and the days of me believing your lies are over. I thought that was funny. They both used that.
I like that too. And then like there is an element of developing an idea of developing a weapon that can help national security isn't inherently a bad thing. Like, that's good. We unfortunately live in a world where war is a possibility. So having a weapon that makes us be able to win those unfortunate wars quicker, better is good. It's really just the ecological side effect that we are having a problem with, it seems like. You know, I think Lex is leaning way too heavily into the patriotic side of it. Like, you know, the protect all the ships in the fleet. I think he's just leaning too heavy into it. But he does have a point. Like, if there's a way to continue to develop the technology so that it does what it's supposed to do without the effect, that's not a bad idea. I think Lex just doesn't care. Like, once it works, he doesn't care about the side effect. But maybe there should have been like a couple lines about, you know, we're still working on it or something. It might have softened Lex a little bit, but that's not what they're going for in this episode.
Yeah, I think earlier in the episode, one of his lab assistant, some lady or something, says, we just haven't figured out the environmental part of it. And he's like, I don't care. So it is like, if they didn't have the deadline, and if he wasn't actively, like if he had a big old pool to do it in, which he's a billionaire, he probably could, then I think that there wouldn't even be a problem. There wouldn't even be an episode about it but he's just like, he has the deadline. He's like, it's this week. I need to get this done.
Right.
So I think, yeah, he is just being dismissive for that reason.
And I guess it is also kind of weird that he's having these, I assume, unsanctioned tests out in the world. Like, for all he knows, a child could have been killed. You know, like, they were swimming at the beach. The kids, because the day before, the beach was full. The day when AC goes out there, no one's out there. But what if, like, 13 kids had been killed by the sonic blast and not just the fish? Like, it does seem kind of irresponsible to not do this in a controlled environment.
And honestly, he's a very compassionate guy. Lex is very compassionate, I feel like. In this show, he is specifically. So I think that is what pulls me out so much, feeling like he's out of character with how evil he is in this episode, as we've said a couple times already.
AC is about to go back probably to finish the job, and then he gets shot in the neck with a tranquilizer dart and takes approximately 4.5 hours to go unconscious. Like, I get that this is his time to shine, but Alan really just wrung every bit of water he could out of that rag of him crawling down the dock before he falls unconscious. Be needing another unconscious person. So in our fourth act, Lex now has AC and is torturing him, fishing for information. Yeah, I did it. Lex is ready to show off his device. Clark arrives and frees AC, and together, though completely off screen, they destroy the device and ruin the presentation. All right, so again, I'll let you start things off here.
I think genuinely, I assume it's the makeup department, did a crazy good job with
the dehydration effects.
Yeah, it is disgusting. His chapped lips look like dead of winter. You're falling apart. It is so gross. They did such a good job. And then they made it all throughout his body as well. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it was set up earlier in the episode, so it was a great execution. They did a crazy good job with that, I think. And then Lex does not torture people. Lex doesn't torture people.
He does this episode. They took his blood, which I think probably is important. I don't remember specifically, but I'm sure at some point in time there'll be an episode where blood's important. But yeah, they basically forcefully took his blood. And then I did like the line when AC asked, why are you doing this? He goes, one.
Why are you doing this to me?
One, you called me a tool.
But two, most people I know who need scuba gear to breathe underwater. But again, there's that sort of gleeful, playful evilness that's really fun, but doesn't feel earned in this episode at this point.
Yeah. One thing that I see that you took a note of is Lex teasing him with a glass of water, pouring it out next to him. So great evil villain stuff. Mm-hmm. Great evil villain stuff.
But really well done. That's, you know. Time for the presentation with the Pentagon. So Lex, of course, leaves, leaving no one around, no cameras, no security guards, just big empty room with a guy strapped to a gurney. I also kind of thought it was a little bit weird that he's on that sort of grate right by the water. I kind of feel like he could have rocked himself and maybe fell into the water. Now, normally you would want that because I would die, but I can't breathe underwater. But if he had been able to knock himself into the water attached to the gurney, he would have been able to get free himself anyways. But he didn't have to worry about that because Clark shows up. Again, he rushes in super speed somewhere and he turns like, okay, why? I have to ask this. I'm so sorry. Why did he choose that way to solve the problem? He looks at the pipes and figures out, hey, if I turn this valve, it will turn the sprinklers on. That's not how that works because sprinklers always have water pressure. That way, if there's a fire, they can activate. If you have to turn them to release them, then they don't work as sprinklers. That makes absolutely zero sense. And he could have just walked over and like pulled the straps. AC already knows he's superpowers. They've already established there's no cameras down here. So my computer's talking to me. I don't understand why they chose to do it that way. And then on top of that, I have worked security and building my profession. I used to be security for a couple of big box retailers and I had to deal with fire sprinklers and stuff. The water that is inside a sprinkler system is disgusting. You will do not ever drink that. I don't care how dehydrated you are. That actually made me kind of go inside. I'm like, I know that's so not funny. What that was, but in the real world, do not drink sprinkler water. Ugh.
Yeah. I think the sprinkler, I didn't think about it when I was watching. I was just like, oh, that's kind of cool or whatever. But yeah, I guess you're right. Cause if he would have turned that on and it didn't do anything, then he's just like, dude, now I'm just wet. Get me off this table. Yeah, that is weird. I wonder if, cause like the whole rocking back and forth thing, like you were saying, to get him off or to roll himself into the water is when he's dehydrated, is he not regular guys? Does he go from super strength to regular guy strong? Or does he go from like no strength, like Clark does with kryptonite, where he can barely even stand? So because we see that he pretty much immediately gets super strong, so we do know that he has some, at least some form of super strength to rip out of those cups. But maybe when he's dehydrated to that point, it's like Clark on kryptonite, he cannot move.
It's certainly possible. Yeah. And and I mean, I know why they didn't do it, but just in my head I was like, that would have made sense. But I mean, yeah, you're probably right, he probably is weaker than even like a normal person would be in that situation. We do get the line that you said earlier when he does free him, he's like, are you okay? Wet and ready, bro.
I busted up with that. There's so much weird dialogue in this episode. I really like the set. It's a cool set. I think it works like with being kind of like an underground, like he swims up into it. That's fun. And I think it works well for the setting of the episode. And it's just a well-designed set. It's really fresh getting out of Lex's office in the barn and the cat house and stuff like that. So it is fun seeing stuff like this. Or in the last episode, it was the nuclear reactor. And then you got to wonder, like, did they just build that and then tear it down that week? How does that work? But it is just super, super refreshing to get into these environments.
I agree. I do like that set. I just, again, wish there was a camera or you know, just have a camera that he has to shoot with his heat vision from the side. Yeah. You know, give us that. But then basically they were going to try to take out the Leviathan and AC. I don't remember the exact verbiage, but he's like, I don't know that I can do it. And Clark's like, maybe with some help. And then they destroy the device off screen. We don't see anything. We don't know, how did Clark help? Did he swim there first and then absorb the first blast? And it absolutely is just, they go to the Pentagon. Pentagon clearly are off the bat. The colonel, general, whoever seems skeptical anyways, they go to self-device. Nothing happens. And then Lex is like looking out a window and we have these two like super speed blur wakes go by. Did Lex see that? Like, was he able to see that, or was that an audience only thing? Because he continues to stare out, but he doesn't react like, holy crap, I just saw two super fishmen swim through here.
Yeah, it's fast enough, I think, when Clark runs by. I feel like it's just the audience sees the red-blue blur. But on water, you are right. There's going to be ripples and there's going to be waves and stuff like that. So I feel like it's unfair to say Lex wouldn't have noticed something like that.
Yeah. So he knows AC has powers. If he sees two things, got to assume the other one's Clark, right?
Yeah. And from the last episode, like, it was proven fact to him, like, here's a file that shows Clark is normal, here you go. But he does not believe it still. There's no, he was still skeptical at the end of that, so he knows. He's just waiting for that slip up. And I think stuff like this and situations where Clark is going against him is just building Clark's case for in the opposite direction that he wants it to go. Mm-hmm. You're making yourself a spectacle for Lex to gawk at. Mm-hmm.
Probably my biggest disappointment in this episode is, like, sure, we get our super fight. Super cool. We get to see Aquaman and Superman face off. We actually get to see Superman lose a fight. That's a big deal. Though, again, we established that Bart's faster. Now we've established AC is faster in water and can fight better in water. So, you know, we're kind of setting the power levels, which I think is kind of an interesting thing. I want to see them team up. That's what I want to see is I want to see how they worked together to defeat a thing that possibly neither of them could have defeated on their own.
That's the super friends to me. And where they come in to make up that part of the other person that isn't fulfilled in the situation. Yeah.
To me, that's the huge mistake that I wanted to see. I know, I'm sure it was a budgetary thing, but I would have preferred not to see other things if you can give me that. That's the superhero team up. You know, that's what DCEU is trying to figure out now. They can't get right. That's why we want to see these heroes work together, because together they can do things they can't do alone. Otherwise, Superman doesn't need anybody. He just solves all the problems, right? So give me a situation where Superman needs Aquaman or Aquaman needs Superman. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm just kind of going in circles here, but that to me, that's a huge disappointment. So yeah, will you read the fifth act summary, please?
Clark goes to see Lex. Lex hopes to see AC again. Clark says he defended Lex to one of his professors, but maybe he was wrong. AC says goodbye, but hopes for more super team-ups in the future, and Clark joins Dr. Fine as an assistant with a promise that he can't possibly keep. AC and Lois say goodbye. Lois goes to Clark for reassurance.
So Lex is on the phone, apologizing to the Admiral for wasting his time. I cannot believe for a second that they can't rebuild this device. Like Lex said, that, you know, there's like $100 million in R&D. Well, R&D is research and development. Once you have created the thing you need, it's much cheaper to make another one.
Yeah.
It makes no sense that they're like, oh, well, too bad. No, Lex has enough juice to be like, I'll build another one and we'll test it again.
I think it's more of they're like, you missed your shot, dude. We're not going to buy something from you if you can't even do your first weapon test properly. Because he was profusely apologetic on the phone when the scene started, or when he came into the mansion. So,
and if that's what they want us to believe, fine. But I think we need more, because Milton Fine specifically says that Lex has turned the cream corn factory into one of the largest military weapons providers. Like he's the Tony Stark of DC right now. Don't believe that one failed test and they're going to like Green Goblin him and like, you know, he's over. Completely mix metaphors there. So Lex gives a little bit of over the shoulder to Clark as Clark comes in. Says, you know, next time I see you, I thought you'd be waving a banner at a protest rally.
That is, again, like he said, your thuggish tactics. It's like, dude, he's just saying don't kill fish. Like, yeah. What is it? He's not being that ridiculous, Lex.
He's not saying capitalism is bad. He's just saying, you know, don't kill fish in your quest to make better weapons. I think that's a reasonable ask, at least to try.
He's not chaining himself to a tree.
But you're just like, Lex, like, just doesn't care. I do like the thing about coming back to the paper, because early on, Lex had thrown off some line about what they're developing is actually this high-protein kelp. It's like a food sustenance thing. And Clark's like, yeah, I think about writing a paper on your high-protein kelp, because there's so many times in the past where Clark has used writing a paper as an excuse for why he's in the caves or why this or why that. I thought that was a meme
at this point, yeah.
Yeah. I'll write a paper on that one.
I really, honestly, all the stuff in between him and Lex, it's almost like background noise sometimes when he enters the mansion and it's just dialogue back and forth, and it's a little repetitive. I didn't really have much to say on it. It's just like their wrap up of the episode.
I had misspoke. This is the part where Clark talks about defending him. I'd attributed to the earlier scene where he says, you know, jokes about having a pitchfork, and Clark says, I defended you. Clark says, I guess okay. I am naive. So that actually happened here. And then we get the scene we did as our cold open. So AC comes back to the barn. They chat it out, and then they give a little fist bump there. So we did all that dialogue already, but is there anything else you want to talk about that scene?
You got some awesome stuff in here, bro. It's just a barn.
It's just a barn. He's working on a tractor.
Yeah.
So we get the, I do kind of like a little bit of the line, you know, he says, stay out of trouble, try to get in some, and then stay super bro. I didn't like the fist bump, but I do like the idea a little bit of someone saying, you know, Clark, be a little more involved. Like he's very reactionary just as a character as a whole. He stops a lot of things. He doesn't seem to do a lot of proactive stuff. There's a lot of alternate comics where he gets too proactive and things go really badly. Like, he, you know, doesn't let people commit crime, all that kind of stuff. But I do like the idea of trying to get Clark to be a little bit more active. And like, he is so powerful and he could do so much good in the world already at this level. He could be out in the entire world saving so many people, but he just kind of sticks around the farm and like does chores really fast and then keeps Lana from dying occasionally and Lois.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes into the question posed at the beginning of every episode. Did he use his powers irresponsibly?
Yeah.
Yes. He doesn't, but also he doesn't realize the extent of his powers yet. Like what, like how much good he can really do. He hasn't pushed a planet away yet. So mm-hmm. I don't think he recognizes that he's more than just the red blue blur, but he's not even that yet, I guess. So. Right.
Yeah. Not for a couple more seasons. So we get another scene with Dr. Fine. Again, I really like this line where.
If you've dropped my class, I hope you haven't come to apologize.
Like again, that fits the Milton Fine character so well. And Clark's like, no, I want to be your research assistant. And Clark's like, and Dr. Fine's like, well, I only hire the best, yet most dependable, never late to class, never miss. And Clark's like, you can count on it. There's no way Clark is not going to miss another class or be, he was late on the first day. Like there's no way that he does not miss class within 2 weeks.
He's a serial misser of all things.
I mean, it, like his dad, Jor-El, said, you got to be back here by the setting of the sun or something really bad's going to happen. Clark didn't figure that one out. Couldn't make that happen. See how that turned out. I laughed more than anything. I'm like, Clark, there's no way this is going to happen. But he's got conviction now. So I guess that's all that matters.
A line that Milton Fine says is, I'm an educator. Truth is my life's work. Stop being biased in your teachings. You are a liar. I don't like you.
I mean, I thought that was actually funny because, I mean, clearly that's not the way he said it. I think James Marsters is doing a great job. I really like the way he's acting here. But I'm an educator. It's my life's work. I thought that was great. Okay. Another one of my huge problems with this episode. So we get a scene with Lois and AC back at the beach. Lois does not know that he has superpowers. Why? They act like they're at the airport. Like, does she see him jump in the water and swim away at the end of this conversation? It makes no logical sense for Lois to think that this is the place where their relationship will part. Like, it would be at the airport or the rent-a-car or the bus station. And plus, again, it's a lake. It's landlocked inside. Is he swimming? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. On top of that, he was shot in the neck with a trank dart here 2 hours earlier. Does he not think there could be more people in the woods? Because, like, dude, he's back. Seriously, Lex is like, I'm looking for this guy.
Scene of the crime.
He's right back where they caught him. They should both be tranked. And AC's back in cap. Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah, 100%.
So I don't know if you have anything to say there. I'm getting excited, but feel free. I want you to contribute. I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, not at all. The only thing I noted two things. Lois has a romantic interaction of some sort with three members of the Justice League. Green Arrow and Clark and Aquaman. Mm-hmm. It was just funny. But
they actually talk about that in the companion guide that became something that they continued to write, that they thought it was fun that she kept having relationships with powered people.
Like, yeah. Well, I rewatched an episode the other day. I've watched like a comfort episode, which is in season 9. I think it was like when they go to the bed and breakfast and it's her and him and her and him,
yeah.
Chloe. And you know who they are. Yeah. They all show, but I just think it is such a funny dynamic that him and Oliver end up being so close, but they both, despite the obvious differences that they've had in the past, one of them being that his one true love was at one point his one true love. Right. The only other thing I noted in this scene was a very, very long kissing shot. That shot lasted 5 hours.
Never heard that before. I like that.
But that is it. That's all I really had for this scene. Not much to break down.
So then our last scene here is we go back to the loft. For some reason, Lois is there with Clark. Again, where's Lana? I guess she's working, whatever. And Lois is like lamenting that AC is gone from her life. And, you know, she says, how am I ever going to meet someone like that again? And Clark's like, I promise someday you'll meet someone even more special. Again, little on the nose. But my favorite part is as the camera pulls back, Clark very sort of awkwardly puts his hand on her shoulder. And I just, again, I mentioned before, that's how Jonathan always sort of like conveys connection to Clark, like all the time. He's hand on the shoulder when he's trying to impart wisdom or share something. And it was so awkward and uncomfortable, but it felt like a Clark thing to do. It's like he wants to reassure her. And that's his, you know, that's what he's been taught to do. His, you know, he's modeling the behavior, but it just looks so weird and awkward.
Yeah. One line that was brought up that she mentioned earlier in the episode was, I think it was the first scene at the time when she says, like, I already have an overprotective dad. I don't need an overprotective brother too, especially one that isn't even my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And Clark definitely feels like he's taking, it's kind of weird because they end up together, but it feels like he's taking like a big brother role, but I don't think it's meant to be portrayed that way. It kind of feels that way sometimes, but a lot of time it's just, he just is being nice, protecting her because he's a friend.
Right.
She's wearing blue, he's wearing red.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
Superman. That's the only other thing I noticed in the scene.
And then we actually get a PSA at the end. Annette O'Toole does a PSA for the Christopher Reeve Paralysis Foundation. So Christopher Reeve had passed away during season 4, and so they were selling like Superman dog tags, and they talked a little bit about that in the book. Like, they raised a lot of money from this program, and then obviously,
I was going to ask if that was successful or not. I would hope it is. Obviously.
I don't know the exact numbers, but Annette just mentioned she was honored to be asked and was happy to do it.
That's cool.
So that pretty much wraps up our episode here. So any final thoughts, or again, if you want to circle back, if there's something we skipped over or something you wanted to touch back on, feel free. And then if not, then roll into your final thoughts on the episode.
Final thoughts is really just, I think it's a good, it doesn't happen as much anymore, but clicking through the channels, channel surfing, finding something to watch. If you were to have landed on this episode, this is an episode I feel like could grab somebody in. It shows like something fun, superhero-esque, but also shows the main unique part of the show, which is that Lex and Clark were friends before they were superhuman relations and stuff like that. And so I think that it's a good starter episode for somebody if you wanted to kind of just drop them in, be like, this is a good fun one. And overall, easy breezy, good use of CGI and their budget and stuff this episode. It's just a quick watch. It felt like it took no time at all to watch this episode.
So I know I was very nitpicky and negative across the episode, but I agree with you that in a vacuum, I'm just randomly watching an episode. This is a really fun one. But watching it in order, and again, I binged the entire season 5 in like 4 days, it just makes no sense. It is so disconnected and seems out of touch. It almost seems like it's in the wrong part of the season. Like, we should be further along in X's and Lex's sort of evil ways. So I don't know if it was originally supposed to be different. I don't know any of the stuff, but totally fun to watch. But when you watch it in order, it sticks out like a sore thumb to me. It's just sort of like so many weird decisions, but it's also got great moments in it. It's a lot of fun. So I'd just give it like a B if I was giving it a rating. Like, it's definitely not one of my favorite episodes. I got a lot of nitpicks, but when I'm watching it, I'm laughing, I'm having a good time. So I don't think it's a bad episode. It just sticks out to me in some weird ways and like road bumps, you know, through some of the logical things I'm trying to get through.
So you watch it on Hulu, correct?
Yeah.
Do you pay for premium without ads, correct?
I do.
Oh, I would, because anytime that I've listened to episodes and you mentioned Hulu, I always thought before I asked to be on, I was like, if I ever get on, I got to make sure that I will pay him to not have ads, because I do not want him to suffer through Hulu ads.
Yeah, we don't have cable anymore. That Hulu is like, we have like Hulu Live. So that's where we watch all of our TV through. And then we have the no ads thing. It's like $3 extra or something. It's well worth it.
Definitely. Because
every now and then you do have to watch ads. It's one thing that really bothers me. We pay for no ads, but there are certain shows that you still have to watch ads on. And it drives me batty when that happens.
It drives me crazy when, so I mainly listen to podcasts and I use Spotify for it. Mm-hmm. And Spotify if there are ads not within the recording of the episode, but like it'll cut away to an ad and you have to skip through 30 seconds, I pay for premium. So I think it's just weird that that has to go through like that. Obviously, the Spotify can't go through and like cut out 5 minutes of an ad spot in the show, but it is just, I digress.
I mean, it's that's how they meant. It's like commercials on TV. It's like, you know, like I wish we had a big enough following that someone would want to pay me for an ad, but that's probably never going to happen. But someday, maybe, like if you hear an ad, so I'll say, because I listen to tons of podcasts and I do skip through the ads too. But if you hear an ad on a podcast, that's actually a sign that that podcast is doing very well. So someone has thought they have enough of an audience that it's worth my money to pay them money to talk about my thing. And I think podcasters try really hard to make it seem like they actually try all the products. I do not believe that for a second when they're like, I've actually been taking healthy greens every day. I don't believe that, but that's part of it, you know, selling the ad. But an add on one of your podcasts means the podcast is doing well. So just think of it that way. It's like a positive thing because you're enjoying it. They should get, you know, some compensation. Okay. Man versus Superman. I'm very interested to hear your take on that. If you listen to the show, you know, I think that's what the designer, the creators were going for in these early seasons, that Clark's on a journey. He wants to be the all-American boy, have the girl next door play football, eat apple pie, but he can't because he has the destiny to become Superman, the heritage of a Kryptonian, and he's fighting with himself. Do you think this episode in any way talks about that, shows it, or just any elements of this episode come to you through the lens of Man versus Superman?
Yes and no. I think that argument can be made that this is an episode representative of that. I think the episode has the environmental element going for it, in that Clark recognizes that he has the ability to change the world for good and helping the environment, but he doesn't do it just as Superman. He's working it as Clark, working with AC, and then later in the episode, we don't see it come to fruition yet, but starting to work with Milton against Lex. Mm-hmm. So he's doing it as both Superman and Clark. So I don't think that this episode specifically can be a super good representation of that.
Like, I agree.
Him being one or the other.
Yeah, I don't think this is a strong episode in that framework. I think the idea of him, I think the biggest crux for me is when AC wants to go blow up the Leviathan and Clark's like, no, we're going to go through Lex. I feel like that's the man part. He's like, talk to my friend, we can work through this, we don't have to use our powers and destroy a thing, and then that fails and they ultimately do have to do the other thing, so the Superman side wins again. But there really isn't, like, they don't touch on the relationship with Lana and how he's having to hide himself. Like, they give a little bit of lip service at the very beginning, Chloe talks about it, but I don't think this episode really leans or cares into it, which might be part of the reason why it's not one of my favorites, because I feel like those are usually the ones I enjoy the most. And this one feels very disconnected. It's just much of a, hey, it's Aquaman, you know, type of a thing, but enjoyable. Yeah, but I don't think the Man versus Superman is really on the spotlight here. Mm-hmm. All right. So now it's your time to ask your pass the torch question. So what do you want me to ask next week's co-host?
All right. If you were to put Clark in an element that you think that he could be beaten by another superpowered person, what element would that be? For example, Arthur winning in an underwater fight.
Very cool.
Hopefully that's not too complicated.
No, I think it's a great question. So now's the chance you get a chance to plug things. If you have any projects that you're personally part of, if not, if you just have other projects that you love, if you have other podcasts you think people should check out, you can drop those here as well. If you have social media and you want to share, now's your time.
I don't have any social media. I don't do any podcasts. I do very much care about the environment. So I do want to shout out, not that they need it because they're huge, but Mr. Beast and Mark Rober, teamseas.org or teamtrees.org. Donate a dollar, plant a tree, donate a dollar, get a pound out of the ocean. It's fitting with the episode as well. But
yeah,
just two things I really care about a lot.
All right, fantastic. Totally fair. It's actually nice, sometimes refreshing to get that type of an endorsement rather than, hey, listen to my thing. So definitely. As for myself, of course, you can find me at Farm to Fable on Facebook and on Twitter. You can email the show, smallvillefancast@gmail.com. So we do have a bunch of new people that have signed up for season 5, but we've had some of our old regulars that have had some scheduling conflicts. So we do have a couple episodes still open for season 5. So if you're thinking about being a co-host, please go ahead and email me. And if we can't work out season 5, we got 5 more seasons to go, and I will do my best to get some of the new people in so that everyone gets a chance, because I do really enjoy meeting new people and sharing Smallville with the new folks like David here today. You can follow my other work, the RPG Academy, of course, at the RPG Academy. If you like role-playing games, board games, all that kind of stuff over there. If you do want to support the show, leaving a review is a good thing. Sharing it with a friend is a good thing. Reddit, again, Reddit is, I hate Reddit. It's an awful place. But the Smallville subreddit's actually one of the better corners of the Reddit space. So if you're on there and you see people talking about Talkville, mention us. If you see me mention our show, maybe give me a thumbs up or comment. It'll help people find the show that way as well. And then if you are interested in supporting the show financially, we do have the Patreon through the RPG Academy, but you can donate there. It all comes to me for as little as $3 a month. You can help support what we do here at the show. And with all that out of the way, just remember to listen after the end credits for the scoreboard.
Farm to Fable is a Smallville Rewatch fan cast and is not officially affiliated with DC Comics, Warner Brothers Television, the CW Network, or any other owners of Smallville and or its related source materials. As such, these companies retain sole ownership of all symbols, images, names, logos, and other proprietary material related to Smallville. Our use of logos, images, names, likenesses, and sound clips are being used under the Fair Use Guidelines. Our logo was created by Michael Waldschlager II. You can find Michael on Twitter at LoserMLW. Farm to Fable is written, edited, and produced by me, Michael Ross, with additional input by weekly co-hosts as credited in each episode's show notes. And now, let's check the scoreboard.
Total number of vehicles wrecked, we're still at 77, as we had no new vehicles wrecked this week. Total number of times a person has been knocked unconscious, we are at 246, with first Lois going unconscious when she dove into the water backwards and hit her head on a piece of wood and fell unconscious. And then AC goes unconscious after he was hit with a tranquilizer dart. So looking at our main cast, Lana has been knocked unconscious 26 times. Lex has been knocked unconscious 22. Clark has been knocked unconscious 19. Chloe, 15. Jonathan Kent, 13. Martha, 7. Lionel Luther, 4. And Lois Lane, now 3. Total number of times someone goes to the hospital. We're still at 102. No one went this week that we're aware of. When Lois hits her head, we hear they say they're taking her to the farm. And then when AC has his thing, he's taken to the farm. So no one goes to the hospital that I know of. Looking at our main cast, Lana has been to the hospital 9 times. Jonathan Kent, 8. Chloe, 7. Lionel Luther, 5. Lex Luther, 4. Martha, 4. Clark, 4. And Lois just the once. And the total number of times Clark tells or shows someone other than his forever crush Lana or the destined love of his life, Lois Lane, his powers and abilities, we're now at 104. With 3 asterisks.